Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
All right, once again, it is Thursday, 1 o'clock, and you have tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in the beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to the Farm Report, and I am your host, Erin Fairbanks. Today, we are on the line with Jay Revelle of Regional Access. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, it's great to have you on, and if I understand correctly, are you, pulled over on the side of the road calling in, or...?
I am parked right outside the Potsdam Food Co-op, about as far away from New York City as you can get, still be in the state, up here near the Canadian border.
Awesome.
One of our longtime customers here, an old throwback kind of retail co-op. It's a lovely place, and little pitch for them, but that's... that's where I'm located.
A little bit of a radio picture painting. Thanks for that. So we are talking with you today about distribution. So why don't you kick us off by telling us a little bit about what Regional Access is and what you guys do?
Okay, Regional Access started 22 or 23 years ago as the efforts of one man named Gary Redmond, who had a vision of providing transportation means for local New York farms to reach markets. It was at the time a very novel concept, and it was very much a bootstrap operation out of his garage. And it grew in scope probably very slowly for about 15 years and then as the rest of the world kind of caught up to what he was already thinking, it has exploded over the last 5 to 7 years. We've had to move into like a much larger facility than we were when I started 5 years ago. And we have, there are just several facets to the way we operate. We are a traditional wholesaler, but we do quite a bit more than that too.
Oh, great. So we're going to tuck into some of those different things throughout our time together today. But what about yourself? So you've been with the company for 5 years. How did you end up working for Regional Access, and what is your position?
I started, in 2007 as a driver. I had come off of working for a different organic produce distributor that was bringing me up through Ithaca. And for a couple of very important reasons, I decided that I wanted to live in Ithaca, and then I found Regional Access, and they were looking for a driver, so I was a very easy hire. About a year into that, my daughter was born, and they brought me into the office to work in dispatch, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
So,
but as obviously, I am called upon to drive every now and then, too.
Yeah, like a jack of all trades. I think so. I think Regional Access is what you guys are, somewhere around 34 employees. Is that right?
That sounds right.
And so, give me a little sense of how it works today. I mean, if I'm a farmer and I want and I want to sell my like side of beef, do I call you up, or if I'm on the opposite end of that and I'm a co-op or a grocery store in New York, I mean, how are people kind of engaging with you guys on either end of the distribution chain?
I think on either end, yeah, that's exactly it. We get inquiries from all facets of the business. We get direct inquiries from farms who want to sell their products through us in a traditional wholesale manner. And then there are items where we've learned just from experience that we can provide a better service by just providing transportation and logistical coordination of often difficult point A to point B arrangements aren't always as simple as they seem, and we've kind of just made a name for ourselves by providing a certain amount of expertise on how to get that done. Sometimes without the and it often does benefit all parties for it not to be a traditional wholesale arrangement. And that's where we've kind of created a new niche for ourselves. It's the fastest growing component of our business is just being a part of a logistical chain that gets direct sales from farms and growers to consumers.
Yeah, I know that I worked with you first through the No Goat Left Behind project last October. Yep. When you helped us transport the goats from our slaughterhouse, Eagle Bridge Custom Meats, down into New York City. So that was kind of how we got introduced. But I know just from kind of a brief overview of your website, you know, you guys are moving upwards of 8,000 to 10,000 pounds of meat a week, 10,000 plus gallons of milk. I mean, sounds like there's a lot of stuff passing through the regional access hands, so to speak. Do you cover just the New York State area, or do you go in other states as well?
We have virtual blanket coverage of New York State. We have a few select markets that we've expanded into, New England being one of them. We have a pretty specific route that goes out to Boston. We offer service in, kind of on the Mass Pike corridor and then in Metro Boston. I wouldn't say it's a huge, actually, it's not so huge for food, but there's been a great deal of Finger Lakes wine being transported out to Massachusetts distributors through us and a few other facets of the business. And we also go into, well, northern New Jersey and Philadelphia as well. Some of our key vendors are down in Philadelphia, so we've tried to make that run a little bit more profitable by moving mostly freight in that case, too.
Okay. So, I mean, that it is kind of one of the things you hear about in, you know, growing regional food economies a lot is, oh, it's a distribution issue. It's a distribution issue. Like, there's not enough distribution to get, you know, products from upstate down into the city or vice versa. I mean, being in the distribution business, would you agree with that? Or, I mean, do you think there's kind of room for 10 more regional accesses in the state? Or are people kind of touching on a bigger, more systemic thing when they say, like, oh, it's a distribution problem?
I think people are definitely catching on. There are some people imitating us and fulfilling, you know, some need. And we are also expanding rapidly. So I think the supply definitely is there. And there is probably more stuff to be moved than there are people to move it at this point. It's just a matter of really being able to, part of what has made us successful is that because we were always somewhat of a do-it-yourself operation, even the people working within regional access have had some great deal of autonomy to work out certain aspects of the business, like produce sales was a very kind of a spontaneous idea that we got into out of just being asked to do one thing for one farmer to one customer, and that grew into, you know, our a network that now we can reach anyone in our distribution network and get them produce from all of our farmers. And the meat shipping was another great example. We get asked by one person to move one cow to one restaurant in the city, and that grows into you know, a couple dozen a week. So that's and this is always somewhat the case where, you know, a problem arises and we're just called upon to find a solution for it. And each person who works at regional access kind of takes ownership of that and just finds a way to get things done, and then that just becomes another facet of the business. I think that's a real key to our success, is that we haven't had top-down management throughout most of our history. And I think that's the flexibility to go along with that is a real is definitely a real strength of our general manager, and I think we owe a lot to him for being able to create these new ways of serving people.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have that flexibility. Also, I think makes for a really great work environment. So we've touched on a couple of different areas, and I just want to make sure you guys are working with meat, beef, lamb, chicken, rabbit, you know, you transport milk, you transport wine and liquor, you transport produce. Is there anything else?
Increasingly we have begun doing distribution for Cayuga Pure Organics, and I think a lot of listeners down in the city might be very familiar with that name from green markets, and just from the fact that they were doing their own distribution. They had several dozen customers in the city, restaurants and retailers who have been turned on to their really quite exceptional products, all coming from New York State, beans and grains and popcorn. I mean, they've really expanded into a lot of different areas.
Yeah, I know. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and Farmer Ground Flour is another great example. This is a very much a bootstrap operation that took over the old regional access building and turned it into a mill. And they are milling grain from that is grown within 10 or 15 miles of the mill. And that has become a very popular item in the city, too. So I think what we specialize in is the raw ingredients for wholesome food. We don't sell very many, the word's escaping me.
Like
we
dry
don't sell
goods.
A whole lot of, processed food.
Okay.
We kind of leave that to the Uniteds of the world.
Sure.
And we just really get people the best locally sourced, whole foods for their own production at that point. A lot of our customers are bakers and people who, take our product and make really great artisan, foods of their own. So that's become a very, viable part of our business as well.
Okay. So you have kind of all these different, this collection of different fresh, and it sounds like pretty much across the board, maybe save the dry beans, pretty perishable items. So I'm assuming there's a big refrigeration or freezer component to your business, and maybe you can talk a little bit about, moving things with the kind of cold chain considerations in mind and what kind of challenges that brings up.
We have to run refrigerated trailers, and they are inherently more complicated. Are more prone to malfunctioning, so we have to have keep really close tabs on our fleet, and we do. We have an excellent maintenance person on site. That's really the sole challenge. I mean, I think it's other than that, it's really no different getting stuff from A to B. But there are they have, we are required to keep record of that cold chain, and we've complied with that. We've worked out a good system for doing that, both in the warehouse, and then once everything is loaded on the truck, I have a sheet here with a driver's temperature log, and I'm recording it throughout the day. So that is very important. Because without that, most of what we do wouldn't work.
Sure. And do you know, I'm just not familiar, like what type of regulation or who kind of inspects or looks at the, the driver logs or makes sure that essentially you guys are transporting products safely? Is that regulated by the state or the USDA or?
I can't speak with authority on that. I'm pretty sure it's the USDA, but I would not be
I won't quote you. Yeah. No, I'm just curious. So you have the fleet of trucks, and then you said you have the warehouse. So is most of the stuff you're doing, you pick up and it comes back to the warehouse in the Ithaca region and then goes out from there? Or you pick up and you go straight on your way? You would pick up from, let's say, Eagle Bridge and go straight on your way to a delivery, or does everything get routed back and then pushed out from the central location?
Yeah, almost everything comes back to the Ithaca hub, just by means of logistically. There are a couple accounts that there's one out of Eagle Bridge that goes straight to Boston, and with some meat for a market out there. So when that it's to everyone's advantage to be able to do that. And so we offer a special price for our freight customers when that can work. And we just kind of use our creative ability sometimes to weave things like that together. For the most part, though, we're still a hub operation, and we will soon have a second hub in Brooklyn. Our New York operation will soon change from, we'll have relay trucks going from Ithaca to New York, and then people down there breaking everything down and putting it on small trucks. So that's one innovation that we will see coming this year, and it's going to really change the way that we can serve the city.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, I'm sure it opens up a lot of different possibilities. I know kind of personally, we've chatted a little bit about expanding the No Goat Left Behind project, and I think that expansion in the city will serve us well. Now, was that like the driving decision to do that? Is it because there's been a growing demand in the city or in the region? I mean, what was the push to kind of make that jump into a second facility?
Well, we were definitely exploring it before the arrangement with Cayuga Pure Organics came along. When that happened and we started to find an additional, 12 to 15, the city deliveries per week are actually twice per week, that it went from being just something that we thought about to something that we have to do. So we happen to have been connected to probably the perfect situation down there, and I think the timing of it was very fortuitous, and now there's just the coordination of making it happen, but it is now a necessity, and it's because of the new business. When we started doing this distribution for them, we acquired quite a few new customers that we didn't have before.
Excellent. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to tuck into a little bit more about distribution in New York State with my guest, Jay Revelle of Regional Access.
Market is a proud sponsor of Transforming Cities in partnership with BioCities and the Harvard University Graduate School of Design on May 2nd. Buy tickets and learn from multiple stakeholders on how food systems shape cities. Visit biocities.org for more information.
Listening to Ballin' in Bali from Brooklyn's own RecTech.
All right, we are back from what feels slightly like a journey to the middle of the ocean. Thanks for that, RecTech. You're listening to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Erin Fairbanks, and we are on the line with Jay Revelle of Regional Access talking about distribution in New York City. So, Jay, you know, I want to tuck into the topic that I feel like always on everyone's mind is money. How are you making money? And you guys do have a kind of couple different facets to your business. You mentioned, you do this kind of delivery service. You have this wholesale service. So I'm curious when it comes to figuring out what's most profitable for your business or what's the right price for your services. Kind of what are some of the things that go into those accountings? Maybe if we start with like delivery as opposed to a wholesale operation. I mean, how do you decide what's the right price to move a half a cow from Ithaca, down to New York City or Ithaca over to the west side of the state?
Well, the first part of that, I think, is that we determine it often by trial and error. We attempted to wholesale, to make it a wholesale arrangement with fresh meat, where Regional Access would basically buy the cow, and attempt to sell it. And it was not very successful because everybody loves steaks, but it's not all that easy to sell chefs on some of the organ meats or the less the not so sexy parts of the cow.
Yeah, sure, I'm familiar with those parts.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of took that failure and looked at it and turned it into the freight business, because we are now no longer responsible for selling it, so that we're kind of leaving that in the hands of the people who do that best, I think. And you know, most of the customers that we bring to are either restaurants who butcher on site or the butcher shops themselves, like Meat Hook and Marlowe and Daughters.
Okay.
And so they are, they are looking for exactly what the farm is providing, and we are the logistical experts in between. And I think that it just really comes down to necessity. What is the best angle to take on it really is often dictated by the profitability and the sellability of the product.
Okay.
For fresh produce, it's pretty exciting to get out there with a whole new batch of stuff every week and get everybody's stuff out on a list and get things sold. So we take different, approach depending on what it is. And I think that's just increasingly necessary in the, in the evolving economy. I actually personally believe that the old school wholesale arrangement is something that I can see becoming very outmoded, because there isn't enough money in between for an organization to basically be buying stuff in order to sell it at a profit to somebody else. The risk that you take and the shrinkage, especially with fresh produce, it's just, I don't think there's enough money in the new economy to really keep that system going. And I can see what we do being a harbinger for how it's going to be done by more people in the future, which is not really taking on that risk in the middle and finding a nice, happy medium of just getting the product from the grower to the consumer.
Right. So really performing, it would be wrong of me to say just more of a delivery service than...
Yes. Delivery service, but also, bringing in the knowledge of what it takes to get that whole process going. I mean, we do make connections for people as well.
Okay, sure.
But we sell our freight service instead of just passively being given what we're given by people. And then, a lot of that business ends up coming in through word of mouth, but it's being able to just look at kind of what I call the four-dimensional puzzle of our whole delivery nexus with the dimension of time added. How do we get everything moved in the most expedient way? That's where we make our money. We do it by finding the most efficient way to do things.
And I'm always curious when I think about this type of like logistical coordination. I mean, in my head, there's like a team of guys and a big computer network and some kind of mysterious program, and you like type things in and it spits it out, and you're like, okay, this is the most efficient way to go. But when you're dealing with these different types of perishable products, when you're dealing with smaller, medium-sized farms, there's all these variables that I think make it more challenging, because it's not just, you go pick up the big load and then you break it down into smaller loads and deliver it other words. So can you talk a little bit about some of the decisions and planning and the, like, how does the logistic process actually work on the ground? Like how do you figure out like the most efficient ways? I mean, I'm not asking for your business secrets. I'm just, I know it's probably not a bunch of guys in front of a computer, but maybe it is. I don't know.
No, we don't have one. We're very rudimentary. We have Google Maps and we have firsthand experience. That's really all we rely on. We don't have the fancy UPS computer. That's still at the level that we're doing it. That still is what works best. Is we have people who have been out there, you know, doing these things, and we have, and we have people who have firsthand knowledge of coordinating things.
Yeah, of
that's
the of
really
the area.
All it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, sure. So, I mean, that sounds like, you know, you're really leaning heavily kind of on your workforce and as people as kind of your biggest resource versus some kind of like magical supercomputer. So, mystery solved.
And it keeps a lot of people busy, but it's because of that, it still has a personal touch as well.
Yeah, which is one of the things I know I appreciate. I want to talk a little bit more about equipment. I know one of the issues that came up when we were working with you guys for the GOAT project was figuring out what kind of containers we were going to actually put the goats in to bring them down to the city. And so you have this other kind of layer of equipment. And I think that you guys called them, you know, bins. But, I mean, it was essentially just kind of like a big plastic bin that you put the goats in, and that's a piece of equipment that you guys own. I mean, I know historically I'm thinking about like milk crates and how milk crates always have the warning on them. They're like, you know, property of so and so farm, and don't take them. And yet somehow everyone has six in their apartment. So, do you have? I mean, what are some of the like kind of container needs of an organization like yours, and how do you manage, you know, the pickup and the drop off and the cleaning of those pieces?
That's probably the best example is the combination bins they're technically called, and they are, it's kind of a mishmash. Some of them are owned by us. Some of them were some of the first farms who got involved with us moving things regularly invested in those bins themselves, and they own them, and we are in, you know, we have custody of them. And then we decided at one point when it was getting a little dicey on knowing that we would have enough every week, we just basically doubled our fleet of bins, and now we don't have that problem. But yeah, that was again just a very, you know, we don't have trailers that have, you know, hangers. We can't deliver hanging swinging meat, and I'm really glad we don't. So that was just, you know, the mother of invention type of thing where we was like, how are we going to get it there? We got this pig. It's upstate New York. How are we going to get to the city? We looked into it. We found these bins. They are, they're approved by the approving agencies, and we do have to keep them clean so they get rotated through. They get cleaned primarily at the slaughterhouse so that they take firsthand responsibility for making sure it's going out, you know, in a sanitary manner. And yes, that's how it's worked. It's very typical of the way we do things. It's a little bit of a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Sure.
Some of the other things, you know, we milk crates are a great example. You know, we deliver dairy in crates in a lot of cases, and then there is a very large freight customer in the city that doesn't want to deal with crates. They want everything in boxes. So we turned part of our warehouse into a milk boxing operation. We employ a bunch of our warehouse staff to do it. That's a fee-based service to the milk people. and that's, you know, that's the way that we've worked with some of the variables in that. Another one would be the buckets of tofu that we both freight in some cases, and we sell that from our catalog. So those are always, and you know, there's a fairly substantial deposit on those placed by the tofu maker, and we have to rotate those through as well. That's about all that comes to mind as far as like special equipment and things that have to be rotated through. Everything else we're sort of still very traditional. A lot of things are just boxed and moved around as you would see in most, you know, food distribution.
Sure.
Companies.
lots of wax boxes. And then I want to touch a little bit on, you know, sustainability concerns and, you know, as a freight company, how that works into some of your decision making. And one of the things that I feel like comes up a lot in more urban based food conversation is this idea of backhauling, you know, trucks coming down to deliver in the city, but then needing to, you know, return to their origin empty. And there's always kind of these interesting suggestions of, oh, we can take, you know, New York City's compost out and send it in these trucks back upstate. And I think, you know, people are forgetting that you probably don't want to haul compost in the same truck you're hauling, you know, your chickens and produce and whatnot. But maybe you could touch on, touch on some of those kind of sustainability and how you guys, you know, work that decision, you know, that factor into your decision making.
Well, as far as you know, we when I started, we used to go down to the city once a week, and we went down virtually empty, and we came back full of stuff because we have a lot of vendors in the metro area, and we've evolved to the point where we're sending, you know, 4 or 5 trucks a week down there, jam packed full, and a couple of them come back full, but then a couple of them do have that issue of what do we put them to use to bring back. I think so far the answer to that has been we keep the drivers so busy doing deliveries they don't have time to do pickups within the hours of service regulations. I mean, you know, we have to get these guys off the road within 14 hours of the time that they leave. So you're looking at 4.5 hours down. Then they put in the work in the city, then they overnight, and then the next day they're still doing deliveries, and then they have to, you know, plan on having 4.5 hours to drive back. So we're really limited that way because we're still only a single hub operation, and frankly, we don't have enough time to fill up the truck as far as, you know, doing backhauls. That will change very much with the when we have the dual hub system. And so that's something that we'll probably want to be tackling as we evolve into that. So far we haven't had the opportunity to really delve into that too much.
Sure. Well, it seems like with your history of, you know, DIY and having been around for 22 plus years, I'm excited to see kind of how you'll grow over the next 22 years and also, of course, excited to work with you guys this fall. And hopefully a little bit in between. Jay, thank you so much for taking a little pit stop to call in from the road. I really appreciate it. And
all right, Aaron. I really appreciate the chance to talk with you and get out some of the message about what we do. It's a fantastic organization. It's, you know, like I said, very, very personable. You call and still talk to real people. I'm really just honored to be a part of it.
Awesome. And you guys out there listening, if you want to learn a little bit more about Regional Access, you can find them at www.regionalaccess.net. Tune in next Thursday on the Farm Report when we talk with Root Down Farm. We'll have Aaron and Steve on, learning a little bit about Western New York. Thanks so much for listening. I'm your host, Aaron Fairbanks, and you've been listening to the Farm Report.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.